what's up, boys? How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing well. We have episode 24 or something like that here with EB7. We'll get into him later. Looks like I'm streaming from a new venue. Got rid of the dorm room. Got the library here. Study. The boys are streaming from some orange-hued area. Looks like, I don't know. Nuke went off in the background or something happened over there.
It definitely looks like a nuclear holocaust where we are, right? It looks like Chernobyl, just like the fucking the people who remain.
But before we get into today, let's hear from this OSF about our sponsor quick.
Yeah, what's up, guys? As you know, the show is sponsored by Rollbits, one of the largest crypto casinos out there. But make sure you head over to their platform for any crypto funded sports betting or NFT lending and borrowing, NFT trading, futures trading as well. The whole lot is on rollbit.com or rollbot.com, depending on your jurisdiction. And we had the first code to give away. The code is it's OTCME9259. OTCME9259. Good luck with that one, guys.
OTC me, I would have said that, but I don't know. But anyway, yeah. So
how's your week been? I saw some big, big P&L days for you.
Yeah, no, there are some decent days. It's been going well. I mean, I've been posting a little bit, getting back in the action. Had some trades work out. I faded the Pepe move, with some good timing. I missed the whole long. Obviously, I was on a scuba diving trip when it came out, basically, and then not around my PC for a while. I don't know. I mean, we talked about you guys hit the long, or OSF did it as well,
yeah, I think we both did. Manda did in more size. Do you think, though, if you weren't scuba diving, do you think you would have shorted it too early?
No, I mean, I don't just like rope. Yes. Yeah.
This is part two.
Let's get back to what's going on here. Perps weren't added till like I was back anyway. I was ready.
Yeah, true.
I shorted it early. I did short it a little early. I took the loss, sat out, and I just was patient until
till it went crazy.
Until it was the right time. I mean, I've been doing it a couple times. I mean, I've shorted a couple things in my day, so I was ready. I knew what I was doing. I mean, I've taken massive losses shorting as well. Too, because I mean,
yeah, I mean, shorting meme stuff, you have to have some balls.
Yeah, I mean, like, you had the what is it called? Fucking Binance news come out that doubled it in a day after it had just doubled. I mean, it was getting pretty capitulatory. The volume was completely off the charts.
Yeah,
my eyes, it was a textbook short. Like, it was not like I was just gonna hold it against me in that spot, but it was pretty simple. I don't know, but you guys weren't happy with 1.5 bill. I think it was going higher. I know somebody told me the other day, like, that price target would give it $500 million market cap. It's like, yeah, buddy, it was fucking created like 2 weeks ago. Like, what are you talking about? People just like poo poo $500 million now. It's like, get a hold of yourselves. Yeah. 1.5. Look,
I think it's got some legs. This is one of those ones where I think the upside potential is way more than the downside potential, but I have traded in and out of it quite a lot. So, yeah, when it went to 3.5, I think. Where would that be? I got out and then got back in again.
Like, I was like 4.2 almost. I think a meme highs right near that.
So luckily, I've managed to trade it around. I still managed to make out with seven figures. But I do think around this sort of level, it's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Go ahead, OSF. Let's hear your take on it.
I don't know. I think it's binary. Like, I think it's not like it's just going to hang out here. It's either going to go like, it's going to have this another crazy pump because everyone's flooding it, or it's just going to like disappear. I think it's more likely it disappears than not. But I just feel like the expected value, if it just goes insane again, is pretty big. So, hey, I'm saying this owning some shit coins, man. Like,
I think Bitcoin's going to tank, like you think as well. And I think that causes.
Yeah, and that's going to cause the liquidity to come out of this, and it's going to go no bid to like who knows where, and then it might rally from there. But usually,
that's what I think. That's your worry. That's your worry for sure.
Yeah,
I think this Bitcoin hard fork stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, all this stuff about like the network's not working, and I just think that's going to cause some questions.
Wait, ordinals? You don't think the ordinals are going to save the in the world here?
We had him on last week, right?
Last week we heard. I mean, Christ.
That is your bear. Like, he is your, like, bear market Jesus right there, man. Like, he could potentially cause a fork of the Bitcoin network and everything goes bye-bye.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sold on Ordinals. I wasn't sold before last week. I don't think I'm sold after last week. I don't know.
What does it take to sell something to KBM these days?
Days?
Yeah. What earns a place in the KBM portfolio? Like long only, not just shorts. Inverse SPX.
I would have bought, like, I'm happy to buy stuff, but it's just like, I'm not going to buy dumb shit for, like, that's liquid and has a chance, like, massive chance to go zero. I think, like, all the crowded trades are just, like, really hard right now. I was in four. I made money in four. There you go.
Yeah, nice.
I sold that. There you go. I bought something.
Nice. I
take long scalps once in a while. I think I took long scalp in ETH the other day when it went up to...
Was that a preseason, though? Or did you actually buy that on the open market?
What is that? Four?
Yeah.
Well... You know, no, I didn't buy the open market. Anyway,
so I bought it 100%. You just sold
it. Right. Essentially, zero risk and sold. Essentially, I mean, I took what was it? Whatever. You don't have to worry about that. How I acquired it. Anyway, well, let's bring the guests in. Where the hell? What's it been 10 minutes? We got EB7 here today. Honestly, I'm not that familiar with your game, but I hear that it's a good game and that you've been a successful NFT trader for a bit now. I mean, you probably came after I was doing things. So I don't know. When did you start trading NFTs? Where did EB7 come from? How'd you get on the scene here? What's going on? Like, how are you doing, I guess, as well?
Yeah. Hi to everyone. And definitely came before your time, after your time. Sorry, I came in pretty late to the scene, I guess, when it comes to NFT traders. It was the tail end of 2021. And even then, I wouldn't really consider myself an NFT trader then. I only had like four ETH at the time. So not like I could do much. I couldn't even get a fourth of a cool cat. As crazy as that is back then. But yeah, I came from gaming. I was a pro gamer. Then I turned streamer, got kind of burnt out of that. And I just saw Rumble Kongs, it was called. I started off with them because I was like, oh, it's a game and it's like NBA 2K and I'll be good at this and whatever. And that was like my entrance into NFTs. And really, like, I just bought in and I got a first taste of like the flip within like the first week. Just prices rocketed and I sold and I was like, all right, I don't actually care to be holding these. I kind of just want to make money. So I was like, mentality switch from like, I'm going to play these games to I'm going to flip these NFTs. And that was kind of the start of it.
So it says in your bio, 2-time world champion.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah. So I used to play a game called Clash Royale. It's a strategy game on the phone. I played for Team Liquid. They moved me out to Los Angeles. And we won 2 world championships, one in China and one in Los Angeles.
Okay, right. So that's from, I thought that was like from flipping NFTs. I didn't know
if they gave me one, I'd probably have one, but no awards yet.
So maybe without skipping too much to the end, you obviously started there with a quarter of a cool cat, RIP.
Yeah.
Where are you now? Because I thought I saw yesterday you bought a gold ape last week.
Yeah, yeah. So I even though my my Twitter is pudgy, I do have a gold ape and I have some dagger apes and all of this. But yeah, so I went from 4 ETH. I've cashed out some, not into USD, but into kind of like ETH, like side holdings of ETH. Like, I'm not going to risk this part. But overall, we've gone from basically 4 ETH to around 1,600, 1,700 ETH. So not too shabby on the trading front. I've done no tokens though, no nothing, no shorts, no longs. Now you guys were talking about that. I'm like, if they ask me any of this, I'm clueless. All I do is my little pictures up and down. Yeah. So from 4 to around 1,600, 1,700.
That's a hell of a run up. I mean, that's good ROI right there. That's like that's almost like the Pepe people put in $20 and made like, yeah.
And in more than 3 days.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little more difficult. I mean, just holding, flipping is like, you know, it takes serious skill to understand the psychology of what people are doing, the momentum of how trends are happening, and many different aspects, especially like taking profits. How do you go about like taking your trades? Are you still flipping a lot? I know like liquidity has kind of came out of the NFT market a bit. So have you slowed down massively? Have you become a holder now? It sounds like you're buying Gold Board Apes. So it sounds like you
yeah.
flipper the holder or well, wealth preserver or what happened?
Yeah, well, for me, like when I got into apes, I was always I flipped grails. So like I saw everyone flipping floors, which is the usual thing. You know, you catch the bottom, you try and make a couple of ETH up and down. I kind of wanted to stray away from that. I thought there was a lot bigger profits when it came to grails, and if you can understand that market and read it and build those relationships and connections. So the gold ape is not something that would deter like my flipping. It's something that I would buy. Some of my biggest flips came on Blue Beams, on Trippy Apes, on Hoodie Punks, on all of that. Like it is what I specialized in. I kind of like took that thing that no one was flipping. So the Gold Ape is still something that I plan to flip. I don't mind holding it. I never had a rush holding anything. But yeah, the plan is still flipping it. It's just a lot more cautious. I'm not someone that buys a lot. Even when we were in bull run, I would only buy once or twice, maybe three times a month, but I would make sure that those were the perfect buys. So again, you know, Gold Ape at 400 ETH with half of it being in trade value, I couldn't pass it up.
Yeah, look, I think you're in the right bit of the market. Like even if the market slows down, I do think that the Grails bit is, when I think about the like how I think NFTs can evolve here. Like even if poker, like the boring non-rare Pokemon cards are worth nothing, the rares even are, like they survive, even if the culture subsides and the remaining culture just kind of directs towards the rares is the main thing. So
I got them right back here. All the anniversaries, the first edition boxes and all that stuff of Pokemon. So I get that exactly. It is like that. Also, the fact that like I broker for people like nobody, for people like Pimp Capital, the biggest Grail buyers ever. And so who am I to, you know, broker for them and not have my own skin in the game? And, you know, I can't be like, yeah, I believe in the Grails that they will come out long term in a DM to nobody and then be like, no, I'm not touching a gold for 400 when they used to be 800. Right. So like when it came just time to buy. Huh?
It came for 400 ETH.
Yeah, and it was, and some of it was in trade, so I gave apes also.
Yeah, I'm gonna go in the OTT stuff in a minute. Let's get a market pause, market update. The show started. Market's fucking barting. It's below CPI pricing. Actually, it's nuking really fucking hard right now.
Yeah.
Like really.
I shorted 6 million Bitcoin at the open.
For all those following, I'm max short, so let's fucking go. But I also got some alerts that the government might be moving 9,000 Silk Road Bitcoins. We might be having ourselves a little lottery win here, boys. Anyway, so yeah, Farouk told me that you're like big in the OTC markets. Are you? So you said you're brokering deals for these massive price NFTs, these Grail NFTs. And you're broken for firms and for what, like private individuals?
Yeah, basically so in 2022, I was like the number one trader of above floor apes. I traded 137 of them, basically built relationships with everyone. And it came to the point where they were all asking me for help. Hey, can you negotiate this for me and all of this? So with my partner, Sen, we basically build up OTC Network, which is just a brokerage firm that we go and we have. At first we were just going to get as many clients as we could, but then there was this obvious kind of like conflict of interest where if two of our clients wanted a Trippy Ape, then what do we do? So we basically picked out our five main clients and we just work with them, and they don't really overlap. Some of them are ape people, some of them are Azukis, some of them are punks, and we basically have a big buyer. And when it comes to selling, we still take on sellers. But when it comes to buying, we only have those.
Okay, that makes sense. Are you making like commissions off that, or how do you? Yeah. What's the pay schedule? It's commission.
Yeah, it's commission once the deal is closed. So
got it. And have you seen a lot of Grails on the moves lately, or is that kind of slowed? I kind of haven't been keeping up with like the Grail market as much. I know it's super illiquid, which is why I broke this. Yeah. Massively helpful.
Yeah. But, so it's definitely. We see less of it, but we still move a ton. It's still like thousands of ETH worth of Grails per month through our brokerage. So definitely, even though the market is slower, we still move a lot of them because these are buyers that, you know, if they were accumulating when floors were 3-4x, they want to accumulate. Now it's just that we're a lot more picky in what we take. So there's still a lot of disconnect between the sellers and the buyers right now. The sellers still think that their grails are worth what they used to be, and they don't want to kind of like accept the fact that they have to take a lower offer. So it takes a little bit longer in today's market to actually reach a deal, but the buyers are still there.
Yeah, I mean, that's good to hear that at least there's some kind of bid still, because it feels like a lot of markets are going no bid in the NFT sector. As for like the grail market, would you say it's mostly Bored Apes still, or like are you brokering punk grails?
Yeah, so we did a zombie punk in January. We did we broke the record on a Zuki sale last month at NFT NYC. With the quad fire, we've done a bunch of the apes with nobody. We did all the one of one other side deeds. The last 10 mega quotas, we brokered 9 of them. So basically all the grails that have moved in the top collections, we've kind of moved through us.
And what are the tips then? Like, why have you gotten so good at this? Are you sort of the person who sits in a dark room all day and closes the blind and gets yourself set up and just watches the market, or are you someone completely different to that?
Yeah, so 2022, I definitely sat in my room all day, 16 hours a day. I'd have, you know, like, it's funny because I would have alarms set up depending on who I was negotiating with, because I started knowing everyone, so I know what time zones they're on. And like if they were on an Asian time zone, I would wake up to be ready to negotiate with them at that time. But I think the major tips that doesn't only apply to grails, it applies to just, you know, if you're going to be a flipper or a trader in general, is the fact that everyone, for the most part, focuses on max profiting, when in reality, that's going to be your downfall, because people are going to stop wanting to do deals with you, since they can't really go anywhere from there, right? I see so many traders always being like, no, this is my minimum, this is my minimum, when in reality, they have already secured so much profit. Give the other person a chance to win as well. Build a relationship more than the profit, because I don't know how many deals I've done with the same people. I've sold to the same people 10 to 15 different apes, just because they always know that I'm going to leave them room to win. And those relationships are worth a lot more, especially in the grail game. There's not a ton of buyers. So if you're damaging that by trying to, you know, take over a deal or, you know, really max out on them, and then all they do is lose, you're going to lose all your business.
That's really good advice. I think we come from a market making background, but there is a trading aspect to it as well, like a brokering aspect. And I do think that, yeah, if you're going to be a broker, you got to keep everyone relatively happy. In terms of, do you take much risk? Like in terms of your own book, like you clearly do own a gold ape and you have some skin in the game, but like how?
I've been a super
risk on. For this, but like, what do you decide to keep and what do you decide to sell?
No, everything is always for sale. The only thing that's not for sale is actually my current PFP, that pudgy, because it's licensed and, you know, like, I've grown a great relationship with Luca, and I actually want to see the vision come, and I want to, you know, I want to walk into a store and pick up my pudgy and like, you know, I don't need the 40 ETH, man. I want to actually live it for once. So that's the only thing that I'm like, all right, I'm not selling this, but everything else that I've ever owned is always for sale. And when it comes to risk, I've been risk on since day one. You know, I built the 4 ETH to like 36, and then I lost it all. You know, it's my fault. I'm not going to go and be like, hey, it's Beanie's fault or this. Like, yeah, they were projects he was in, but I should have done my research. I should have, you know, like, and I learned from it. I lost everything in Pixel Vault and Stack Toads in like a week. I was down 36 ETH, and then I built it all back up. But, you know, when I got back to 40, I dumped all 40 into a doodle whale. And then I traded out of that at 150. And when I got 150, I put it all into apes. And then I've been all in countless amounts of times, but it's because I trust what I do, and I'm not going to make a rash decision or FOMO into something. Everything has a plan to it. Yeah. But I'm definitely not scared of risk. And you know what? If I do end up losing at some point, I've already put aside so much ETH that, you know, I don't care. Like this is what I'm here for.
I think that's smart. I think you got to know the market as well. Like I think if you're gonna really be brokering trades, you've got to appreciate all the value of all the different things. But in terms of the nuances of the NFT market, what do you think are the main mistakes people are making right now in terms of traders? Like, are they not valuing things correctly? Like, I know you have a really keen eye for literally every single trade, right? Like,
yeah,
you're like one of those guys who knows exactly where the floor is of all the different cool cats trades. But what is your edge?
So when it comes to trading, I think everyone just tries to like jump in. Like everyone wants to have an asset, right? Like I want to have the ape, but I want to trade this. I spend 90% of my time just watching. Like that's where you really win. Is just watching what people are buying. You watch what collectors are actually valuing. Why is this? There is luck involved sometimes, but the majority are not lucky sales. They happen for a reason. And I think people don't like to accept that, right? It's like, oh, why did he get this sale when I should have gotten a sale? But it's just because you didn't watch. You bought a rarity rank, or you bought something that people told you that, you know, was worth something, but that person hasn't traded in 2 years. He minted an ape and, you know, he still thinks that merch had his 20 over floor. So I think the most important thing is just actually sitting there and watching. It's annoying and it's not fun, you know, having 100 ETH sitting there and you're not buying anything. But that's what really gives you the edge. If you just understand and learn and you know, you can go to buyers and you can go to sellers and ask why this was valued this way. I asked so many people. I don't care. You know, I don't care to be the clueless person. I will ask you. I will ask anything that I wanted to know. And then I had my sheets written down, you know, like, these diamond grills are selling at this. They're selling to these sellers. If you see that they load up ETH, okay, I'm going to go ahead and try and negotiate a diamond grill because I know this guy has a diamond grill collection and then maybe I can bring it to him lower than all his other buys. It's just a lot of watching. I didn't use any tools at any point. It was all just manual. But yeah, patience and watching is probably the biggest key. And I think also it's harder now with all the blur stuff. Everything's moving 10 times faster. You know, you buy something and then someone dumps 50 things and then that buy is no longer good. So it is a little tougher.
How's your like game changed with the blur stuff? Because like, you know, 3 months ago, different rarity points and like aesthetics and all that stuff were like really counted and mattered. Now everyone's like just dumping good shit at the floor. Yeah. And it seems like that doesn't feel like there's many marginal buyers of it. So like, how has that affected your strategy, firstly? And secondly, like, do you think we're going to get back to a scenario where people actually start, like, are those good buys, that stuff at the floor where it's like you're getting like mid-tier traits and stuff like that?
So I think when it comes to blur, the strategy, the biggest change I had to do was simply just cut out collections. Like, I don't do mutant flipping on grails or anything. Like, it's just not possible. Like, the traits are gone. There's not enough liquidity there. I basically cut out punks as well. And when it comes to apes, I only do the trippy blue beams and gold, as opposed to before I used to do the, you know, the aesthetic mid tiers, the four trades, all of that. That's gone. But I don't think it's something that we're going to get back, because I genuinely do believe that some of the things were just trading at premiums that were not really there. Like, they shouldn't have been there. All blur did was kind of like accelerate us through and be like, okay, this is really not worth, you know, like a merch hat is not worth 20 ETH more than the ape that's sitting on floor without the hat. It's not, it was just as common as everything else. In fact, there were like thousands of merch apes almost, and people were paying these crazy premiums. So I think it basically just accelerated everything. I don't expect it to go back. Maybe some of like the mid tiers, like the aesthetics or like specific, like double robots or, you know, like punks with a certain amount of attributes or some stuff like that will come back. But the original mid tiers that we had are pretty much gone. And the only collection that I can see it sticking when it comes to mid tiers and grails is Azuki. And just because those guys are like the most absurd collectors, like they will not sell anything. They value every specific thing. So it held up there, but that's about it.
What does that mean exactly? Like, why are Azuki buys different, you think?
Because Azuki buyers, like, apart from like this might not sound great for, you know, apes and all that, and I have a lot of apes in my bags and stuff, but Azuki buyers actually have the money to buy. Ape buyers and everything else just leverage everything, man. Like, I don't know how many people come over to me and they tell me, hey, I got one ape in Ben Dao, but I kind of want to sell it, but you got to pay me first, and then I'm going to buy the mutant at floor. And they like, he hasn't paid off his loan and he's already thinking about the mutant he's going to buy at floor to then end out that and then buy something else. And it's like, you go to Azuki people and nothing is, you know, leveraged. The grail holders have liquidity on hand. They have tons of it and they're ready to go at any time. So they never really have to sell. And it's like this game with them, right? You know, the same way we spoke about Pokemon before, when you collect stuff, you want to have, like, you know, the whole collection. Azuki did a great thing with their emblems. You got to collect the Kigus, you got to collect the fires, you got to collect the spirits. And then they have on their website, if you've collected everything, right? So it's like this playbook that everyone's going and collecting, kind of like a competition where everyone actually has the money to keep buying whenever something comes up. So Azuki holds like a very specific spot when it comes to grails and mid tiers.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, it's very, very clear that, yeah, the board ape market is pretty degenerate. Just from the loans being taken.
Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of anything else, in terms of like the stories around buying these things, like how, if you're a seller, because there are quite a few sellers, you know, it's really easy to buy things in this market. It's very difficult to sell them. How do you think sellers need to do it better than they're doing it?
So when it comes to selling, I think when you go, the higher you go in collections, the more you need to understand other collections, because that gives you the way to trade out of stuff, right? The majority of my sales on the higher end, or on even like my friends, right? I'm very close with Cyrus, who's another really top trader, and Sen and all this. We kind of trade out of everything, but it's because we learned all the collections that could trade up to it, right? If we have apes, we know mutants, Azuki, doodles, clones, and all of this. That way you're able to actually sell off into these trades instead of having to look for an all liquid buyer, which is really tough in these markets. Not a lot of people are willing to spend their ETH, but a lot of people are saying, hey, apes are low. Yeah, my collections are a little bit lower, but I can finally trade up. If you don't have knowledge in those, it's going to be very difficult for you to actually trade out of it and get the value you should get, or ask reasonable things, right? So
how does that work, you think? Like, how do you can make margin there? Is it like 3 NFTs plus ETH?
No, you don't. I don't. Sometimes I don't take any ETH at all. I don't mind not taking any ETH at all, because it genuinely, the lower in the collection you go, the lower end, the more liquidity there is. Whether it be doodles or anything, I'm not going to give you max value, but I'm going to give you a fair value where I know I can move it. But that, again, comes from knowing those collections, having relationships in those collections, and knowing where you can dump off here and there. But when it comes to selling in this market, it's just really tough. If you're looking for all ETH, it's very tough. I think people have to be a lot more open-minded when it comes to actually taking in trades. You could do partial trades, but it'll get you out of assets, and it'll give you way better margins on everything, because you can price your things a little higher. People will accept it. You know, the fact that, like, hey, he's taking all my assets, I'm willing to pay 50 for this ape instead of 45. So if you're able to really understand the other collections, you can ask for those 5 to 6 ETH margins higher than if you're just taking full ETH.
And what do you think about the state of the NFT market in general right now? Do you think it's coming back?
I don't think it's coming anytime soon. I think there's money to be made, but I would be lying. You know, I'd be sitting here lying at a bag protecting if I'm like, yeah, we're back. You know, Elon tweeted, we're back. Like, no, we're not. I don't think anything's really back. For the most part, even with like the like Pepe and Turbo and all of this or whatever, like a lot of people think they're making so much money, but it's the same thing with NFTs. You know, people don't like to sell. Like, you actually have to sell to get that money back in to the ecosystem. And a lot of people rode it all the way up and they're starting to ride all the way down again. So if I had a little more faith in people actually taking profits, and I'd say, yeah, maybe we have a comeback soon, but I think it's going to take some time.
Yeah, it's been a long road.
People hate selling, don't they?
They do hate selling. I think Blur has made things slightly easier, but in a it's just accelerated the decline, which everyone wants to sell. But I kind of agree with you. I think there's gonna be very, very few collections which kind of make it through the other side of this.
I think somebody had a question right there, right? I think somebody. Our producer put it up on the screen. Luke Cannon wanted to know how much of the Grail volume is brokered and not visible on chain. I mean, probably nearly all of it, or no?
No, actually, like most of it, most of it is just X2, Y2, or NFT Trader, which now everything gets put up everywhere. And like you can see it, it's still on chain and all of that. It's just you're not going to see it happen on like OS or Blur or stuff like that. So you got to kind of be following along. it's not going to be in the main in your eye, like, you know, hey, this got bought on OpenSea. But most of it is still done just because, you know, grails are expensive, and to do that trustless is very, very hard. If I have something personally and I have it with one of my clients, I've sent it over, you know, just direct, and you won't ever catch that. But that's very specific situations. It's happened 2 to 3 times maybe.
And how do the royalties usually go with that? I mean, I'm assuming they don't pay any royalties.
No, no one pays anything.
Yeah, of course not. I want to bring that up.
I'm not going to hide behind anything or act like I'm paying royalties. I don't pay any royalties. You know, it is what
we're the only guys who paid royalties.
You guys paid royalties, right?
Yeah.
In full.
I mean, we kind of owed it. We kind of owed it to them. They made us quite a lot, so.
Yeah,
we did it. I think you probably owe Death Beef as well.
But I don't really pay royalties on anything else. Not like small sales. I'm not fucking paying royalties.
Not like wreck guys.
It's just a bare minimum. But yeah, that's why the markets are tighter, right? More liquidity, less fees.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about like doing these flips, when you were doing that, it sounds like you kind of quit doing the flips for right now, right?
Right. Yeah, I bought the gold, and I bought like a bundle off of someone that was going to get liquidated. It was like a 500 ETH bundle of apes, mutants, lands, and all of this. I already flipped out of 95% of that. I only have 2 apes left, but overall, I've sat back a little more.
And then you said you don't trade the fungible coins. Do you have any interest in getting into that yet, or what? Like, what's the risk management here? Sounds like you put some money away. Money's piled back into apes, but are you trying to?
I'm trying to remember what the outside world looks like. I've gotten back into golf. I've gotten back into, you know, the gym and all of that. Kind of just getting back to normal life. But honestly, the reason I don't do like the fungible stuff, the tokens, all this, I can't, man. The anxiety, I cannot do the anxiety of like not. I don't know. You know, like when I buy the NFT for a flip, obviously there are, you know, uncertainties, but. My brain and everything is like, I know where this is going. I know to who this is going, and I know for how much this is going. When I go into tokens, I have no idea what I'm doing. So the anxiety just like, I'm staring at a chart for like 6 hours straight, and then it's going too low, and I'm like, all right, sell. And then the next 5 minutes, it's all up, and I'm like, all right, I'm done with this. You know, I've had enough.
Yeah, similar though. It's all like psychology and like, I mean, it's like trading patterns. It's the same thing you're looking at now with the NFTs, but
yeah,
it's a different light. You'd probably be good at it. Maybe you should start, you know?
Yeah, maybe I will. The only thing I did was I remember when everyone on my timeline was tweeting like the Pepe stuff or whatever, I was like, I need something to put in while I go to sleep because I'm just annoyed of this. And I put in like 10 ETH on Turbo. I woke up. It was like 25. I just cashed out. I was like, never again. I'm done.
Just quick hit, like a blackjack.
Yeah. Yeah. Done.
That's smart. So it sounds like you take risk management pretty seriously. Yeah. Like when you were building up that stack, I think we talked to Cyrus. I can't remember now. He had a similar trajectory, and we talked about his risk management. Were there points where you like putting your whole stack at catastrophic loss risk, or like were you pretty dialed in, or like what, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Risk management your whole ride.
Yeah, I mean, well, like when I bought the 40 ETH doodle floor was 2.5. You know, like. That was like pretty high risk, and like same thing with apes. I bought a trippy ape the day of the Luna crash. Like it crashed, and I was like, you know what, this guy's panicking. I'm going 300 ETH all in, and I bought a full trippy pimp set, and I flipped it for 125 ETH within 8 days, right? And then FTX crash. I bought 2 Bluebeam apes, and I was all in for like 500 ETH at that point. So yeah, I mean. I've risked a lot, but I also understand, like, for me, when I buy, it's more of where is the downside as opposed to how much can I make on it? Like, that is the real question that I ask myself is, you know, like, if I buy a Bluebeams at 200 and this gets really bad, it'll probably go to 150, but I know I can get out at 150 no matter what. A Bluebeams will insta-sell at 150. So I was like, okay, 50 downside for 150, 200 upside. I'll take that risk. But I always had that in the back of my head. Like every time when I was going to buy a grail, it was how low can this go?
That's a really good way of looking at it. I think the only issue is that when the grail buyers market seems to dry up. But you're still saying you think it's strong.
Yeah, it is strong. Like also when I was buying all the, there, I do have an advantage, obviously, to other people in the sense that I know every single grail buyer and they all prefer to buy from me than to buy from someone else. So like the second I get something, if any of them are interested, they hit me up instantly and they're like, this is something I'm interested. If it's in this range, I'll take it off your hands right away. Right. So like but that came from all these risk buys that I did, building up all these relationships and not profiting at max. So now I have way less risk when it comes to illiquid grails because they are more liquid for me than they are in the general market.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue. I thought, let me step in real quick about the a comment we have from the comment section on YouTube from Nitz. Somebody wants to know, as a beginner, how do you get into OTC deals and what would you advise to begin with? I mean, it sounds like it's like any kind of, when you're connecting big buyers, like high net worth individuals and sellers, a lot of it's about relationships, which it sounds like you almost cornered the market already on that. So can somebody new even break into that?
Yeah, I think you can, but I think you have to find your own path in it, in the sense of like when I started grails, no one was flipping grails. You know, like I was able to corner that market because I took that risk. I think there is, you know, you can do that for mid tiers, but I think as a beginner, the most important thing you have to, like, I would focus on is dealing with people, because I'm sure all of you know people online and, you know, when you're dealing through Discord or Twitter, or whatever, personalities are way stronger than they are in person, or people get very upset, or people, and you really should like just have as many interactions as you can with people and learn how to deal with it and maintain your cool, never, you know, try to just understand how to maneuver every situation with smaller deals. That way when you do reach, you know, the apes and whatever, all the punks, you're able to get a good reputation, because a lot of people don't do that with the smaller collections and they come into apes, punks, all of this, and then they have three terrible interactions, and once the community writes you off, you're done. Like, there is no way back.
Yeah, I think I got a nice little two-sided question then about, first of all, have you ever been burned or tried to been scammed by people trying to scam you in these grails, like selling? And what are some of the crazy personalities, like stories of people like flipped out on you?
Oh yeah.
Just like crazy. anything that sticks out in your mind about a deal gone wrong? You don't have to use
any names, obviously.
But you deal with some strong personalities for sure with these people.
Oh yeah. I have stories on stories. I've thankfully never been scammed. No one has tried anything with me. Obviously, like back in the day, people sent like the fake NFT trader links, but like I wasn't going to fall for that. And when it comes to like crazier stories, there's one very specific grail ape holder who is just like the most crazy person I've ever had to deal with. It ended up in like a terrible situation, but I was negotiating a deal with him for 5 days over a Trippy and another ape that he was originally going to buy full ETH. We agreed a deal. Then he fell asleep or whatever, wakes up 10 hours later and says, I want to trade now. And I was like, you know what, whatever, I'll build a relationship, I'll take a trade. And then he tries to include like these apes or whatever. And I was like, okay, but I need some of these dogs to pair up with it. The value is not matching up. He's like, no, I can't sell those dogs because I minted them. So I went in there and I checked if he minted the dogs, and he bought them like 2 weeks before. And I was like, brother, these are bought. He's like, yeah, but those, they match well. And I was like, just don't lie to me. Just tell me you don't want to include that. And then he's like, yeah, include the lands. So I go through, he has like 35 to 40 different lands. I go through all of them. I give him the lands and he's like, yeah, we got a deal. Set up the NFT trader. I set up the NFT trader. Nothing happens for 2 hours. He disappears for a day and a half. And then he comes back. He said, I had an emergency. I think the trip is worth 50 ETH less now, so we can take some lands out. And I was just like, all right, man, like stop bullshitting around. Like you're straight up lying to my face. And he took that and flipped it. And he was like, if you ever call me a liar again, I'm gonna make sure you're kicked out of the Basie Discord because you're disrespecting an OG. And I was like, oh my god, like what is wrong with you, man? Like you know, so stuff like that is just like, and you can't really do anything. You just gotta sit there and, you know, kind of take it, because the only positive thing that you can do to kind of feel good about yourself is tell them off, but then you ruin that relationship. So I kind of just sat there and I was like, yeah, maybe I use strong word, but this deal's not getting through, much love, whatever. And I kind of just walked away from it. But most people, you know, would scream back at him or tell him off or, you know, you're a psycho, all this. But that's one of like many.
Yeah, you got to kill him with kindness after are schizo on him. On
you. Yeah, yeah, but he's, yeah. This guy's threatening to kick me out of Discord and shit. I'm just like, all right, man, I've had enough.
Yeah, and it sounds like maybe he didn't want to part with his precious dogs and all that shit and was having some regret. Some
Every day, every regret. Yeah, 12 hours of negotiations to agree and then regret and then lower and then, yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah.
It's not all fun, you know.
So you see all of the NFT grail buyers. What is the number one grail in your opinion? And what do you normally get asked about? Like, I want this.
So like number one grail, just like that every collector wants to have, or in general, like liquidity wise?
I think every collector, like when you're like, oh, everyone wants one of those.
Yeah, I think when it's just high end punks, man. Every collector always asks me like, They start off with like, I'll get an ape, all of this, but then I always get the inquiry of like, hey, if you have a good zombie punk that comes online, or hey, if you have like a 3D hoodie or something like that, not just like the regular hoodies, but like the higher end, the VR hoodies and all of this, they always end up wanting one. And you might not see it in their main wallet, but even people that I started brokering for after, they were like, hey, do you know I could trade up this punk? And they show me another wallet with like their punks, and it's just like all grail punks all the time. Those, I feel like grail punks will always just be the top tier when it comes to grails.
I thought you were going to say Spirit Azuki, because it just feels like those have just gone nuts.
What's the pull on those right now?
The like, you can get a female one for around 150, 145. Yeah, it's crazy to think about. It's funny because I sold like four or five spirits, personal spirits, and every time like I would sell one, I would just be like, I can't believe I'm selling this spirit for the same price as a trippy ape or a hoodie punk. Like, that's why I couldn't really hold them. I love Azuki. I genuinely love Azuki. I love that community and everything, but I couldn't justify holding the same value in a spirit Azuki than I could have in a hoodie punk or a trippy ape. And they're still there. Males, you cannot get under 180. No, it doesn't matter what you do.
That's crazy. They went up to like 300 nearly at one stage, right? Like
yeah, 250, 275-ish. Azuki, man, it's because no one wants to sell. So you kind of just have to get what you get. And like, if you want something very specific, you have to pay the price. I don't want to like call out specific names and all of this, but I've had multiple non-spirit holders decline 300 and 350 ETH for non-spirit Azuki. They're just not interested. They won't even entertain it. They won't give me a counter, nothing. And these are record-breaking sales, and they're just like, nah, I'm good, man. I love my Azuki.
Well, that's NFTs for you. People get attached to their bags and NFTs. It's harder to sell than a token, that's for sure. That's why, I don't know. They're already a liquid to start with, and then that sucks up even more liquidity when people make it their identity. But I mean, that's the cool part about NFTs too. You know, it's more than just a normal collectible or a token.
Absolutely.
And do you ever do art? Like, do you ever go into like X copies or anything like that? You should
move into that next. That's the spot.
I need
a commission on these.
When I got into NFTs, I was like, yeah, I'll try like, you know, like some art block stuff or whatever. And I've never lost money quicker in my life. And I was just like, you know what? This is no art for me. I think it's also harder. I do believe that when it comes to like actually getting those sold or finding buyers for art pieces, it's a lot harder because it's something very specific that people want. You know, like you have all these fidenzas and all that. And I love fidenzas. Like I look at them all the time. I have never actually bought one, but I love the way they look and I love everything. And then I call up my business partner. I'm like, look how great this one is. And he's like, no, that one's terrible. I like this one. And then I realize like there's no way to actually into it, you know. It's what people like, so I can't really go ahead and trade them knowing that this is good or bad.
Yeah, it's also subjective.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of it was just what narrative is spun by who. If it's somebody important in the space, like this artist, spin it up, and all of a sudden it's worth a shitload. So it's like, you know, I don't know how many things can you make up to get something to move.
That's like the art market in general, though, isn't it?
The art market in general, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, people don't want something until it's expensive, then they want it. You know?
Yeah.
But to be fair, the big buyers are in that space as well, right? Like you traded into some of them, KBN. There's billionaires buying. Well, yeah. There was.
Was. I don't know if there's.
I mean, once upon a time.
Yeah. I think they quit. They're like, this is fucking stupid. We failed. I mean, they got some good bags. If it ever bounces, I was thinking about that trade earlier because we were talking about something. And Yeah, I mean, that guy's bags are sick. I don't know if they'll ever be good,
right?
But
you're looking at the so you're not looking at like the 3AC portfolio at all, thinking maybe I can flip some of this stuff.
Me? Nah, I got what really. What's up?
I said any of us really. I didn't know if Eric was either.
I'd be watching more like the market just to see how they react to it more than actually buying mice. I'm very curious when all these pieces just come online, like what they're going to go for first off, and then what effect it's going to have on, you know, the ripple effect of everything else of the supply just coming online. I'm not looking to buy again. I'm someone that likes to watch, so I'm just going to be watching it and, you know, see where it goes.
What do you think, KBM? You're gonna dip a toe?
I don't know. I'm honestly not even watching it, so I guess I'm not dipping a toe either. my discretionary income is not going towards NFTs personally, or NFT art. I'd rather spend it on something else personally. I don't know. That's just me. I don't know. I'm like past the NFT stage. My bags are still full of NFT art that I like, so I don't really need more exposure, is what I'm trying to say. And I don't think, like EB spoke about earlier, I think the market has a lot to digest still before you see, like, you know, upward trends and big prints again that are going off constantly and a lot of volume. So I'm patient here. I'm watching, as EP would say.
Yeah.
Watching closely.
So maybe let's talk about the future a little bit going forward. What is the future you reckon for you and your business? Do you have like any goals you're trying to set? You know, you've made like, what is it, 1,500 ETH? That's incredible. Well done, man. But what is the figure? You going for a figure, then you just...
NFTs wasn't something where I liked it, and I keep doing it. It's not... thankfully, I'm in a position in life where I don't need the money. So I don't have a money number set out there. It's just basically do what I enjoy and keep... I think that the thing that I love the most is the kind of like the networking and meeting people and all of that. So like, especially with my clients, they're very like high-end people in outside of the NFT space, obviously, if they're spending this amount of money, and just meeting all of them and meeting community members and all of that is kind of like the goal, is just to build as many relationships as possible more than the actual monetary gain.
Well, that will help. yeah, I think it's probably good. I don't know if like, even in my head, you can always just think of a figure. I think there was a Harvard study recently, which is something like the 500K guy. They asked a guy at 500K, 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 million net worth, what figure they would quit at. And every single one of them said double.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the way it is. I don't know if they asked like a 20 million guy, but they said,
yeah,
it was, I'd stop if I hit my highs again. This time I would stop for sure.
You sure?
But you would stop and then do something else. No, yeah, or you would.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, obviously you don't stop and like retire and like do nothing. Yeah. That's obviously boring. You got to do something, but yeah, it's easy to move the goalposts though, for sure. That's why it's smart not to have those kind of number goals. What about losses? I mean, like, it sounds like you didn't take any huge losses along the way. We always like to ask our guests, because a lot of guests are taking a lot of risk. Have you ever taken any huge losses in the NFT spaces or in anything in general like that you've been investing in?
So early on, I did. I lost it all basically on those two projects I mentioned earlier. And I've had very minor losses, but thankfully, I haven't really had a loss in over a year on any of my buys. But I don't buy a lot either. You know, that's the thing. You kind of got to switch it up. If you buy a lot, you're going to have a lot more losses. I've had small losses. Like if I want to degen into something, sure, I'll degen into it. And, you know, it's going to go down, or it's going to go up, or airdrops or this and that I want to play. But nothing significant to the point where I'm like, I bought an ape and I took a big loss on it, or punk or any of that. Just a lot of calculated risk and obviously some fortunate stuff, you know. I've been lucky at points as well. I've gotten a couple hits on OpenSea that I was a little bit panicky about. I was like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna get out of this or not, and it ends up hitting on OS, and those aren't calculated, but you know, it happens, and I'll take them.
Yeah, man, it's always good to get out of those illiquid positions, especially. I'm sure being a Grail like buyer and seller, you got some big sweats when you have these big ass like prints on the book.
I can just imagine.
Like, oh, look, there's a lot of money. Is the buyer going to back out? Is the seller going to get cold feet? Like, those are big
things. Yeah.
I mean, like, I've had a couple, and it's scary.
Just if you're just buying Grails, like you said before, like you're buying floors. If you buy in size, at the moment, you kind of know you're going to get out. Whereas,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I, like I said, a lot of the times I bought already knowing who I was going to sell to and like that they were able to. That's why it's like very calculated buys. And I only need one or two a month once I got into like the Grail Apes. Earlier on, I was buying more stuff, but everything was going up. 2022 was just so easy. Like if you were just here and you were buying, you know, you buy a Doodle at 5, you can sell it the next day at 7 and then buy it again and then sell it at 9. And, you know, Azuki's I bought pre-reveal and then they flew up to 15 and everything was just flying. So it was a lot easier than it is now. Now, if I was playing a lot now, I'd probably get hit. I'm going to get hit here. I fell asleep last night on my first night farming on Blur. I was like, I want to see what this is like. I fell asleep and I woke up to like 5 mutants and I'm like, all right, here we go. Here we go with this stuff. But I'm holding them for now and see how market reacts to it. But at worst, I'll take like 2 to 3 loss on that.
Blur farming. We know it well.
Yeah, you guys farm? You guys are farm wars?
No, I think they do.
It's opposite. We're the dumpers. Oh, yeah,
you guys did it well.
Yeah, all right, man. Well, we're going to like start to wrap it up here just because it's almost the hour mark and we got to get into the roll bit stuff. But we always ask one last question. What would you tell the audience if they're listening? Well, they are listening because they're in the audience. how not to get wrecked and how to avoid it.
Relax. Don't FOMO. And every time you're going to FOMO, walk outside. Every single time you feel FOMO, just walk away from the computer. I think that's number one way not to get wrecked. We all feel it, but some people act on it and some people don't. So just try to be like a robot and, you know, keep that in your head.
Agreed. Seems like a lot of don't FOMO patience. I mean, like those are always
It's
extremely good things like discipline.
Yeah. The best way to trade is to not trade, like just limit your trading as crazy as it is. That is really it.
I think a lot of people forget like not having a trade is also a trade.
Yeah. You know?
Yes. Yes.